Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Now, onto one of the stories we did this week, which sparked a huge contentious debate online. It was by our own Adam Ragusa. Adam interviewed a Cambridge cartoonist with a physics background named Randall Monroe. He created a chart comparing radiation exposures from various common sources. The intention was to provide context for the numbers being thrown around in news coverage of the Fukushima disaster.
It was tough for Adam to talk about a chart on the radio, so he converted a number of the values on the chart into durations of sound. Let's listen to a bit of that.
Here's a sound representing the amount you get from a typical dental x-ray. Want to hear that again? Okay, now here's a duration of sound representing the average total dose that someone living near Three Mile Island got during the accident. One more time. Dental x-ray, Three Mile Island. Okay, now here's what a mammogram sounds like.
This long tone goes on for a little more than 30 seconds. Adam is in the studio with us right now. And Adam, both you and Randall, your source in the story, caught a lot of flack for this demonstration.
Yeah, somebody named Dana asked me how much the nuclear industry paid me to do that story.
Uh-huh. And I see somebody named Fizz came to your defense and said, quote, if the industry paid anyone off for this piece, they should ask for their money back.
Yeah. Well, I think that our listeners have sufficient faith in us to know that's not how we do things at WBUR. But I do want to mention one more grounded criticism of this piece that we heard from a few listeners. That chart that Randall put together and that I, in turn, tried to translate into radio has some short-term radiation exposures, like a mammogram, sitting side by side with day-long exposures, like the measurements around Fukushima, or year-long exposures like the maximum yearly dose permitted for radiation workers in the United States. This is something that Randall himself was very, very quick to mention as something that's crucial to keep in mind when you're reading his chart. But still, we had listeners who felt like mixing the time scales like that is really inherently misleading.
Right. And there was one comment from a listener named Michael. He said this, that a 3.6 millisievert dose over one day for a person 50 kilometers from Fukushima is not small if it continues for a long time, if it goes on and on for months. So, Adam, the issue really is prolonged exposure here.
Yeah, and Michael is absolutely right. The other thing that some listeners pointed out was the difference between getting a big dose over the course of a year to getting a big dose all at once. You'll remember, Anthony, that a couple of days ago, some workers at Fukushima were hospitalized after they touched some radioactive water and got somewhere in the neighborhood of 170 millisieverts all at once. That's still less than the annual dose allowed for workers in emergency situations here in the U.S., but they were still taken to the hospital. So I called Jacqueline Yanch, who is a radiation physicist at MIT, who I used as a fact checker on my original story. And I asked her about this whole short-term versus long-term thing.
Getting it all at once versus getting it over a year, as far as we know, makes quite a dramatic difference. So any health impact would be dramatically reduced when you spread it out.
Why is that the case? Because let me reach back to my incredibly elementary understanding of radiation and its effect on the human body. I seem to remember that radioactive particles fly through your body, and there's a chance that one of them might hit one of your cells in such a way that it mutates your DNA and the cell turns cancerous. And basically, it's just the more radiation you get, the higher the likelihood is that that would happen. So why would it matter if it came all at once or over a space of time?
If a lot of DNA is hit all at once, it makes it very difficult for the body to correct that damage. But if you spread that radiation dose out over time, the body has some amazing repair mechanisms that can detect changes to your DNA that shouldn't be there and can fix those altered DNA molecules between sort of hits from the radiation.
In your opinion, as a scientist, is there any value in looking at a chart like the one I showed you that has, say, the maximum external dose from the Three Mile Island accident, which is a short-term dose, seeing that demonstrated as looking very small next to the maximum yearly dose permitted for U.S. radiation workers? Is that an inherently deceptive comparison?
At a first pass, it's not deceptive because most of the way the world treats radiation dose is they integrate it over time and then just talk about total dose. I don't think it's that misleading. Where it comes in to be more misleading is if you compare, say, diagnostic medicine radiation doses, chest x-ray or a CT scan, and compare that to an accumulated dose that one might receive from living in a contaminated environment. The contaminated environment gives you your dose very slowly, which is much better for you than getting it all at once, which is what you get when you get your CT scan.
That's interesting. I think the people who have criticized this comparison have been saying, well, you're minimizing the impact of these cumulative doses from people who live near nuclear power plants or what have you by comparing them to something that we think of as benign or beneficial, like a medical scan. But you, Dr. Yanch, are basically saying it's the other way around. The medical scan is potentially much more hazardous.
Yes.
Should we be scared about mammograms?
The dose rate to breast tissue is actually quite high. And it is possible that you're creating cancers in women that don't have cancer already, whilst finding cancers in some women that do have cancers. But by and large, the trade-off is such that you should have the mammogram.
Okay, well, here's the big question, Dr. Yanch. This whole exercise that we went through with this story was an attempt to just provide some measure of context to the numbers that people are hearing quoted in the media with regard to the Fukushima disaster. So I'll ask you, do you feel that the reportage around Fukushima has overblown the scope of the health risks for the people living in that area, or has it been right on, or has it underrepresented those risks?
First of all, we don't have any scientific data that tells us how dangerous the levels of radiation are to the citizens living around those reactors. The dose rates are pretty low. They may be 40 times higher than background, but we have no direct data that says that's dangerous. We do not have very much information at all about how much radiation above background is too much to live with. We constantly make ultra-conservative assumptions in estimating how risky radiation is, and that's very appropriate in the workplace where the employer is going to be responsible for paying for and implementing all the radiation protection. There's no big downside to overestimating the risk of radiation, and that is what we do. That's in writing and from the committees that come up with these recommendations. But in the situation where we have a contaminated environment, we've got a completely different scenario. There we've got individual citizens that have to be responsible for their own dose reduction strategies. They have to leave their home, or they have to, you know, get rid of some food that they might otherwise have eaten. Every citizen has to pay the price. And here we don't want ultra-conservative estimates of risk. We want the best estimate of the risk we can possibly have. And the risk estimates we use are not the estimates that are most consistent with scientific data.
So that's Dr. Jacqueline Yanch, a radiation physicist at MIT. She's saying that radiation levels we consider dangerous for regulatory purposes are really much lower than those we actually know to be dangerous. But I should say, Anthony, she also stressed to me that the research on this is very incomplete, and she thinks we really need to invest in more.
All right, Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And listeners, keep the conversation going. You can comment online at radioboston.org or on our Facebook page. And if you haven't liked us, like us already there. We're at facebook.com/radioboston. Or you can give us a call on our listener line. That's 617-353-1137. Again, the number is 617-353-1137.
And coming up after a short break, James Bond meets Mozart. West Side Story meets The Simpsons. It's the classical comedy duo of Igoodson and Ju. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.